college actor, what's your next step? Out of college actor, are you famous yet? Out of college actor, why are you in the doms? Out of college actor, what's your backup? We don't know. Help.
I still haven't seen Mamma Mia too.
I have it now. So
what are you saying?
Okay,
what
but are you saying? Do you know how more upsetting it is because I'm obsessed with Cher? Like, what am I really doing?
Yeah.
Is the real question.
Yeah.
Like, I love Mamma Mia, and then I didn't run and see Mamma Mia 2. What happened to me? What was I doing?
Real talk though, Mamma Mia 2 is better.
Everyone keeps telling me that, and I don't know how I feel about that.
But it's real, because we were doing that puzzle, and we watched Mamma Mia 2 first, and I was like, let's watch Mamma Mia. We haven't seen it in a while. And it was like night and day.
Oh, no.
A little rough. Well, because all the dads sing. And we were like, what did they sing? What's the song?
Our Last Summer.
Our Last Summer. Yeah. It's
not we didn't need that.
It's not great. Amanda Seyfried saved everybody in that movie.
Honestly.
She was like...
Bless her heart.
Living her best life.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a theater household.
Okay. I love it.
Okay, so ready to start?
Yeah.
Cool. Welcome, everyone, to Out of College Act. That's my Chicago accent really broke through on that one.
Actor.
Welcome, everyone, to Out of College Actor. I'm Sarah with Spencer, and our guest today is...
Anthony!
Yay! Thanks for coming in. I'm so excited.
Of course, I'm excited.
Welcome. So we're going to start with our check-ins. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to check in because we just did a check-in earlier in our previous recording today.
Oh my god! You let them know.
They know the truth god now.
I gotta let them know.
We pre-record, okay?
I just made a potatoes with lemon and thyme.
Sounds great.
It was pretty good. I don't know if I cooked the potatoes the way they were supposed to be, but it wasn't bad for a first try.
Okay.
Yeah.
I learned how to say no to things that I know are going to stress me.
Yes.
And try to avoid overload. I have a busy day tomorrow, and they asked me, hey, if you can, we have another visit for you. And I said, I don't think I can because of my schedule. I'm sorry. And they were like, totally fine. And it was fine.
Yes.
I'm learning how to be like, take care of myself first.
That's right. Oh, gosh. It's my turn. I think... Oh, what did I do? Today I took personal time for myself to just relax,
yes.
Which is like, as theater people, we apparently don't know how to do.
Yeah,
hell
no.
So I was like, what do I want to do today? And then I had that moment of nothing.
Yes.
And I legit just sat on the couch and like binged watch TV because I could.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good. Yes.
Ooh,
okay. My senior year was supposed to be chill and it was not. I did literally everything.
That's...
And I wanted to die by the end.
Yeah.
That's real.
Yeah. So, we know you from college.
Yes.
We graduated together.
Oh. I just cracked my knuckles. Sorry.
Oh.
I was surprised.
I thought you were like, oh, you're wrong.
No, that's not where we know each other from.
No. Damn it. You were actually my stage manager at one point.
I was. I feel like, oh gosh, I did so much.
You were great. Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
I enjoyed you as a stage manager.
Thank you, thank you. It was very difficult. Like, in the best way possible.
Yeah.
It was very difficult.
Well, I imagine it's hard work anyway.
Always.
Yeah.
And like, final semester, like,
yeah.
That was our final semester of undergrad. Mm-hmm. Main stage, or stage managing a main stage is already stressful enough. Add that, along with I was taking 24 credit hours to try to graduate on time. Yeah, you didn't know that?
No.
I was like, I was supposed to graduate in December, and I was all like, yeah, no, I'm ready to go. And so I was like, 24 credit hours? That's nothing.
And,
then I was all like, oh, that's something. But yeah.
You're like, get me out of here.
Please.
Yes. God. So what were like your first steps after graduating college? What did you do?
I slept. A lot. And like I say that like partially joking, but also like for the first month after graduation, I just relaxed. which was beautiful, and I like need to advocate for that time to recoup after four stressful years. And if you went from like, what the heck is that called? Like regular grade school. Why was that so hard? K through 12, straight to undergrad, like that 16 years of just being in the educational system.
Yeah.
I slept. I took a break. I thought that was so important. I was very fortunate for right after I graduated, I had things already lined up. So we had our actor's showcase. Like in early May, and like we had to be there bright and early that morning. Before that, I went to an audition.
Jesus.
And yeah, I went to an audition and ran straight to the actor's showcase. And by the end of it, I was cast in a show, which was beautiful. So like I was already cast in something after graduation, which is like, hey, that's a goal. Yes. And then I had already, already had my Steppenwolf apprenticeship and fellowship lined up as well. So that was kind of the first couple steps. I think there was something about me wanting to be involved so quickly. Like, I wanted to have something under my belt as quickly as possible. Yeah, I think that was kind of just me being eager to actually explore Chicago theater.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was my jump in to things after undergrad. No rhyme or reason. I just did a whole bunch of stuff.
How was that like transition from being used to being in college to jumping in and stuff? What was that like?
That was hard for me. I think just because I was so used to being so busy all the time and like always having something to do, that a lot of downtime actually scared me a bit. Like in the most non, like I'm not complaining about having a break, but also like, I was very much like, I should be doing something right now. And that made me kind of nervous often. Yeah. So it was a hard transition because I felt like I should have been doing more. And I think that's like kind of the mentality we all have coming from undergrad is like, all right, as soon as you're done, you jump into the work field. And then like, this is what you're going to do for the next 40 years. So you have to establish it now. And so having that break from things very much rattled me. But as soon as like I realized it was okay to feel comfortable in being uncomfortable, I mellowed out. So, but like those first couple months was really rough for me because there were moments where I was all like, do I need to just go to grad school? Do I need to keep getting a degree? Like, because I didn't know why I wasn't feeling, oh gosh, what's the word? Feeling engaged in something or feeling fulfilled in some way. And I was all like, it's just because you're so used to doing too much that you don't know how to do just enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So you, how did you get to the apprenticeship with Steppenwolf? Because you said that was already ready to go out of grad school. So how did you, I mean, what made you look for it? How did you get there? Can you talk about it?
All those words.
Sorry.
No. So let's see. Oh, what's the timeline of that? So in early February, I was looking for...
Of senior, obviously, right? Senior.
Yes, okay. Of senior year. Early February, senior year, I was looking for something that was going to increase my skills in my management area. So like something to say about me is like I'm an actor who's also like really, really interested in management, which has always been like two polar opposites, and people are all like, you can't do both. And I was always all like, bet. So like I was all like, how can I find something where I get those management skills that are gonna further what, you know, will in some ways always pay my bills in some way. Like that's kind of that skill of, I always knew I was going to be able to do something where I would make money in the arts.
Yeah.
And pair that with, you know, me still being able to be an actor. And so, I ended up coming across Steppenwolf, and like Steppenwolf has a long history of like theater I'd like to do, theater that was very honest to me. So I was all like, let's just look at their education program. And I came across their apprenticeship and their fellowship programs. And so I looked into like areas that really spoke to me. And so I applied to production management and theater management. for their apprenticeship programs. And so I applied. I got interviews for both, which was like already like, one person wants to speak to me? Okay. Two? Wait a minute. Like, so had two rounds of interviews with them, with each of them. And so at the end of that process, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. And like, Steppenwolf, please don't sue me. Like, I don't know. I was offered both. And I was told to choose which one I wanted.
Wow.
And that was like very, very difficult for me. Mm-hmm. Because I was all like, first of all, you just told me that I need to choose between two areas I'm passionate about. But also, you just told me that I was good enough to get two different positions.
Exactly.
And that, like, was, like, a big, in my head. Like, not of a cocky moment, but of, I felt justified in the work that I've always been doing. Yeah. Like, it's happening for me. So I ended up picking production management. With that came along, I was allowed to have my fellowship with each one. So I still continued with that. My fellowship very much focused around, or what I've chosen it to be around, is equity, diversity, and inclusion work. And focusing that around Chicago theater industry, and then broadening that out to how the industry of theater looks at it in general. And that has been very fascinating for me. It's been a hard journey. I'm very blessed to have it. I truly like use that word in the most found, that's not a word, but I made it a word. Like, honestly, I have so much appreciation for it and what I've done. It was a very hard process. It was a very stressful one. First of all, like, shout out to Anne Halgo for her letter of recommendation. Like, if you know Anne Halgo, you know how hard it is for her to take time to, like, do something for you personal. So, like, getting her to do that for me meant a lot. So her letter really, like, spoke to them. They all, like, spoke about that in the interview. And, like, when they were like, this person spoke so highly of you. But it was a hard process. And, like, just the application process was hard enough because of what they were asking for. I was like, God, why do you want to know so much? Just interview me and find this all out. Like, but, yeah, that's how I got to Steppenwolf. That's where I am.
Heck yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
So then, like, what are the things you've learned being in, like, a more professional world? What are the things that, like, maybe surprised you or, like, you didn't know coming out of grad school?
Yeah, like, does anything of what you learned transfer to the real world? Yeah. Not to say it wouldn't, but, like, no. I don't know. You talk.
No, you're fine. I think something to say about, like, there are no skills I gained from undergrad that I have not used in my professional career so far. And that's not saying, like, I specifically learned something from this class. I had the benefit of creating a lot of experiences for myself in undergrad. And through creating those experiences, I created knowledge that I didn't know I wanted or needed. So I think a big thing, like, I definitely use those skills every day. I think the biggest thing that I take away is my ability to communicate with all different types of people. So being in production management, I speak with every single person in the theater and the administrative office.
Wow.
Like, there's not a person I say I don't touch, which is great, like, because I love communication. Loving communication is very much a big part of my job, and that's kind of led me to form what I like and don't like in different ways. But I definitely feel like that's one of the biggest things I learned. I think also being a team player is, like, obviously we were involved in Free Stage, one of the biggest team playing organizations you'll ever run into at Illinois State University. Like, I don't know why that's not in the mission. Why be a team player? But that was something I definitely feel like enhanced more in my professional career.
Yes.
Something I didn't expect was for it to be a lot more chill than, like, I feel like we all have this mentality of it's gonna be crazy. Yeah. Like, it's gonna be fast paced, it's gonna be this, that. Mm-hmm. And not that it isn't that, it's just not as stressful as I feel like we all would think it is.
It's so comforting to hear.
Like, honestly though, like, I in the idea of I am comforted in making mistakes. I am encouraged to make mistakes. Because by making those mistakes, I am A, teaching somebody how what they thought, you know, the average person would know, they don't know, and maybe that's something they should look at. But also, like, I'm learning that mistakes are going to happen and to accept them. Mm-hmm. Like, my favorite word is sorry in the theater. Like, I say sorry, like, at least 5 times a day. Well, I used to say sorry at least 5 times a day. It's a good 2 now. But, like, the idea of accepting failure. Everyone write that down. Accepting failure is so big.
Yeah.
Because everything you do is a lesson, right? Mm-hmm. So, that idea of failing is a lesson.
Yes.
And so, I very much accepted failure as a part of my learning process, also as a part of the professional world. I'm not saying we can mess up on everything, or, like, you know, the simplest, the things we claim to be a simple mistake aren't bigger in what scale they may be, but I've learned that mistakes happen. They have to happen.
You can't plan for them.
Yes, and you can't plan for them. Like, that's so real. Like, when it happens, I think one big thing I've learned is it's not about the mistake, it's about how you go about
it.
How you react to it, how you go about it afterwards. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that's one of the biggest things I've learned by being in the professional world.
Okay.
Also, everybody wants you to succeed, which is so weird.
We were just talking about that with Cassie, because we were, like, asking her about modeling, because we've talked about how when we go on auditions for theater, like, nobody's sitting in the room going, like, I hope you fucking fail. Like, you're the worst. Like,
nope.
But it's not.
Yeah.
There's something comforting in the fact of we're all here for a hustle.
Yeah.
Like, yes, the person sitting next to you may be your competition, but nobody is in their head sitting, they're not going to get it because I'm going to get it. Like, that's not the mentality of what this, in my opinion, that's the mentality of what this industry is.
Right.
I think there's something so comforting in the fact of everybody wants everyone to win.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that especially in Chicago.
Yeah.
And that's what everyone tells me. They're like, that feeling you're feeling is very Chicago. And I'm all like, they're like, in New York, you might meet a few people that are like, I'm going to push her down the flight of stairs. Like, she got to go. But they're like, in Chicago, you're good. Like, everybody truly is about the art.
Yeah.
And that's so beautiful to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So can you talk a little bit on the business side of theater?
Because
I feel like, you know, all the guests we've had, or, I mean, not that you also graduated with an acting degree, but I feel like it's only been about the acting. But you have experience in, like, the
other wall, the other side.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, I do. Which is very, like, very odd. I'm a very much an oddball in the theater industry.
Well, because you have seen both.
I have seen both.
You've acted and you've...
I've done everything backstage.
Yeah, exactly.
There's not an area I haven't touched in some way. So I'm going to direct the business side first.
Do it.
And then head to, like, the other world
of
what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Being a part of the business world of theater is very interesting to me. I've picked up skills I never thought I was going to truly use, which is contracting.
Mm-hmm.
And the importance of a well-written contract. Like, so that's just such a simple part of what it is, but it's something that we don't think about.
Right.
The everyday maintenance of what a theater takes is so neglected. And I think it's very interesting that, like, storefront theaters, like, they have, someone that told me recently, they're like, you are a person that would succeed in storefront.
Ooh.
And I was all like, oh, okay, why? Because I mean, like, the way it was said, I was like, why? Okay, sure. And they're like, the idea that you know everything is your biggest, the biggest thing that you could have in this world.
Yeah.
That is something everyone can't say. And in storefront, it is so important to have people that can and will do anything.
Yeah.
And so the idea of I know how to keep the lights on, the idea of I know how bills are paid, the ideas of I know how contracts are written, has made me successful in the jobs I've applied for. There are a lot of things where, like, I've been told I'm overqualified. There are a lot of things that where people are like, when did you graduate? I'm all like, how many months have we been out? Like, 8 months? I don't know. Something like that.
It's been 8 months?
No, it's been longer. It's March. It's been 9 months. That extra month helps. But, like, the idea of, like, people... I think people often use age as a dictator of experience.
Yes.
And I love that I confuse the hell out of people. Like, and, like, the idea of, like, I am a manager and people, like, see the way I handle situations. Like, it makes me feel great that people recognize that my age is not a does not define my experience, or it doesn't define how I handle situations, things along those lines. And I think the sooner that people start to realize that, because age is experience in this industry, which is so freaking weird to me. Mm-hmm. The sooner people start to realize that, the sooner that we're going to have people that are younger running these theaters. Yeah. The sooner that people are going to trust in people that are younger running these theaters. So that's kind of my little spiel on business. Business is, like, so important. Also, like, I was a theater management major also. Like, mm-hmm. So I lived in the business world, too. Like, I was in State Farm. Like, I saw all the fancy stuff. So I had that experience. But also then, like, how can I transfer that to the theater world was so important to me. Mm-hmm. Everything else in, like, so the creative, I call it the creative world. Mm-hmm. Of theater outside of acting, like the management of that and the idea of like how do things get to where they get on opening night is so magical to me.
Yeah.
And it's like, because there are so many different personalities, but also so many different aspects that go into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all from the type of designers and their experience and how they bring it to this particular show. To the discussions that are happening, you know, in classrooms, or discussions that are happening in the box office, like, or happening in SOTD marketing. Like there's so much framework of the people that you don't see, and how all that comes together for a production that, no shade to actors, but just actors seem to get credit for.
Mm.
Which is so weird. Like, not saying we don't appreciate our designers or whatever that may be, but the actors are the ones that very much, they're literally in the light.
Yeah, they're the connection to it.
They're the connection to it.
Consumers,
yeah. And so I have such an appreciation for creative teams. And that's why I, in undergrad, it was my mission to learn every single area of the theater.
Yeah.
Which is like, I didn't know how to be a dramaturg, but I wanted to learn how to do it. Yeah. I didn't know how to be a producer, but I'm going to learn it. Like, those simple steps, I did practicum, and, like, everyone hates practicum. Sorry, SOTD, but everybody hates practicum if you didn't hear yet. But those were some of the most, like, most memorable and best experiences that I had. Like, I had no interest in doing anything in the scene shop, but, like, sitting there and watching people work and understanding their passion for their craft was so important to me.
Well, and sometimes, like, you do find passionate. Like, I had light practicum, and I loved it, and I took the lighting one class, and it was, like, so fun. Like, it's, like, I appreciate that, because, like, what's his face? Lin-Manuel Miranda said something like, it's, if you're going to work on a team, you better know what everybody's job is and what effort they're putting in to do it.
Definitely.
So that you're not assuming. So, like, I appreciate that you made that a mission and you were like, I'm going to be an actor, but I'm also going to know what everybody who puts work into the show is doing. So, you know, like, it just,
I think
awesome.
It's important. I feel like I became a stronger theater practitioner because of it. I feel like I know the quality of the work that I expect out of people, but I also feel like I know what people expect out of me as well, as an actor, as a production manager, as whatever I may be doing, as a stage manager. Like, now that I understand how everyone works, now that I understand what their process is, how can I feed your process to be even a better and more enriched experience?
Yeah.
Because that's our job. Our job should be to always, in some ways, top the last production for experience, at least for me. Like, I always want to say, like, the next experience I work on will be better than this, even though it was an amazing experience, right? Like, that's what we do it for. We do it, it's funny, like, us as theater people, we don't always do it because it's the show that means the most to us in the world. We do it because of the experience and the people we get to work with.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's even more, you know, I hate when I use the same words, more enrich, mint. I don't know. Like, sometimes that feels even better. But figuring out what we do it for and how we can top the next or the last experience is so important to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I guess that kind of leads into the question of what do you do it for? Like, what motivates you?
Oh, God.
Where's your inspiration?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. I wasn't prepared. That's a hard question. I think what I do theater for has changed a lot in the last year. Mm. Year and a half. I think I originally did theater for the impact of what I was going to gain for it. So, like, what experience was I going to get? And then how could I affect other people? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I did acting for, at least. I was very much like, I want to make people feel something. And that meant a lot to me. Mm-hmm. Like, how could I make someone feel something? And within the last year and a half, between my efforts with EDI work, between my efforts of understanding what this industry is and what we actually do this for, it's become more about what can I give the audience or what can I give people that see these shows that will make them have conversations when they go home.
Mm.
So not saying that, you know, like, I want to do theater that starts conversations. I want to do theater that makes people angry. I want to do theater that makes people... I don't want everyone to go home happy every night.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, might be rude of me or might be, like, hard of me to say, but if we're all going home happy and we're not living in a happy world for everybody, the theater that we reflect or that we show needs to reflect the world.
Mm-hmm.
And our world is not always happy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to be doing shows that are showcasing what the good and the bad that are happening in the world. And so I think what motivates me to do theater now is to provoke conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Good or bad conversations. But it's no longer about me and the way that I make people feel. It's about how we as humans can continue to conversate about things that are either very controversial and things that people talk about all the time or things that people are really, really upset about.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody knows the words to describe it. I don't, that's where I'm at. I don't know if that's the best answer, but I also think it's important to say that theater is, the reason you do theater and what you do theater, the reason you do theater and what you do it for, I think should change often.
Mm-hmm.
Because we as humans are changing.
Mm-hmm.
I read somewhere that, like, the human mind doesn't stop changing until you're like 45 or 50 or something like that. Like, you should keep changing. And with that change, you should change your perspective of what you're doing, your craft for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's every area.
Yeah.
Damn. I didn't come here to lay this knowledge, but here we are.
I feel like we need to just have like a segment on our podcast for every episode.
Ooh, let me know.
Ask Anthony.
Ooh, that was legit my advice column in middle school.
Was it really?
Okay, so...
We're bringing it back.
I'm a complete nerd, but if anybody watched the show Charmed, she had a advice column called Ask Phoebe, and I just wanted to be Phoebe. And so in middle school, I had an advice column where people would write and ask questions, and it was called Ask Anthony. And so, like, we can bring this back.
I'm ready.
Let me know.
About it, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm interested in, we were talking about your fellowship through Stemwolf. What kind of stuff did you do in that?
Mm.
Sure. Oh, gosh, a lot. So,
and how is that different?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't even explain that.
No,
so
you're fine.
My fellowship.
I just don't know.
Yeah. So, Stemwolf is very aware that there is a cultural divide in, the theater industry. So the idea that, how to say this, 90% of the theater industry is still white, right?
Yeah.
So, like, the idea that 10% of this whole industry is people of color. Not like black people, not like Hispanic or Latinx people, like, they are people of color in general.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we give those people a fair opportunity to continue to spread their knowledge or to expand their knowledge and to become better theater practitioners and to create that change. Mm. So Steppenwolf created this fellowship that basically is an equalizer, I think is a word to use. Like, it's kind of an equalizer of what, of them being aware that this industry is so dominated by white, especially white males, and how we can create that balance. Mm-hmm. To further push these fellows to a higher standard, a higher placement in this industry.
Okay.
I think that's a better word to use. So in the fellowship, we focus on things that will expand both our knowledge as future leaders that are people of color, and also expand our knowledge on ways to have conversations about EDI work, to have conversations about racism in the industry, many conversations, and then also researching and communicating with many organizations all over Chicago that are already doing the work and taking those tips to expand our knowledge and what we want. So as I said, my project is very focused around EDI work. It's also very focused on education. Mm-hmm. So my project is very much, why does Chicago theater not look like Chicago?
Mm.
Boom. Find my book. Yeah. So I was sitting and watching a show, and I can't think of where it is, but I also probably don't need to say where it was. But all shade, all tea. Get your cups. But we were sitting, and I was watching a cast that was an all-white cast telling a story that could be told by anybody.
Mm.
But they still chose to tell it on the perspective of just a white cast. Mm-hmm. And I had a moment where I was sitting in the theater, probably like 100-person theater, and I looked around and I saw 4 people of color in this full house that was 100 seats. And I don't know how it happened. I swear it was magic. But every one of us locked eyes at once and realized it.
Dang.
And that was the moment where I was all like... And one was... I want to say she had to be like a early teenage little girl. And I was all like, this is the theater she sees in her neighborhood. You know what I mean? Like that idea that she took a night, you know, where she could have been at home watching Disney Channel. And came to see the theater, and she didn't see any representation of herself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Like, that broke my heart. And so that made me think deeper into the educational system of what theater is and how we are ingraining this knowledge of whiteness into the curriculum of what we teach in schools for education as well. And so I ended up doing a survey with some people that was asking them questions about their history of speaking about people of color in their schools, playwrights that were POC, plays that focused on POC families, things along those lines, and the results blew my freaking mind. And these were like, it was about 20 people. And all of them, the majority of them, came from the Chicagoland area, and none of them had any educational background of knowing people of color. And, like, that broke my heart, but it also, like, it affected me, too, because I was the same way. I was embarrassed when I got to undergrad, and I couldn't name a black playwright other than August Wilson.
Or Lynn Nottage.
Or Lynn Nottage, or Lorraine. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that it was embarrassing.
We had to take a class just to learn about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, like it's sad, right? That we get all the way to like to university level, and we don't know this thing, these things. So, so then I decided to figure out how we can change that in educational systems.
Cool.
This is not a project that's going to end at Steppenwolf. This is a project that's going to go a very long way with me. I've also come to terms with the fact of I can't fix Chicago. So I'm looking into more ideas of how these organizations, how schools pick their curriculum and things along those lines? How do they pick the things they do? Do they consider these things? So it's a lot more research of academia, which I've always had a problem with in general. So like legit tear down the patriarchy. like, screw it all. But it's a very long going process, and I've discovered that it's not going to end with Steppenwolf.
Okay.
And I'm fine with that, but I think it's very important that Steppenwolf, through this fellowship program, did give me the lens and the ability and the connections to start this project.
Yeah.
But I'm far from done with it, I think, which is like, okay.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Cool. Damn.
Yes. You're just throwing so much good stuff in this episode.
I'm so glad I could help. Yeah. Like, I was sitting here like am I going to say anything good? I don't know.
Everything.
I'm just, I'm letting it wash over me.
Please. Let's talk about it, because the problem is we don't want to.
There are classes in the universities that deal with, like, diverse cultures and stuff, but you have to elect
to
choose it.
The one I took was online.
Yes. Oh, really?
Yeah. It was Black people in media and theater.
Yes.
Film and theater.
Nice.
And we read,
who taught that? Dr. Orr?
Yes.
Hey, Dr. Orr.
She was amazing. We read Raisin in the Sun. We read...
Piano Lesson.
Yep.
Color Museum.
No.
No.
God, there was... I'm sorry, there was one... Oh, no. No. Because... Okay, it was weird. So it was like... Each section was...
It dealt with different topics. We had, like, a poetry...
Yeah, sometimes it was poetry. Sometimes it was, like, real world. Like, we learned about Rachel... what's her last
name?
Yes!
Do y'all want to hear my very, like... Oh, my gosh. So, I do Black History Month.
She makes me so mad.
I hate her so much.
Rage.
I do Black History Month shirts, because why the hell not?
Ooh.
And so, I'm pissed. Got here.
Wait, what do you mean?
I make them. I just started making them.
Well, you should give us the link, and we'll put it...
Oh, I ain't got them for publish yet, or purchase yet, but if we want to get
on
that...
When you do,
listen,
send it along.
I will. But I made a Rachel Dolezal shirt because I do it for Black History Month, and I was pissed, because it was supposed to get here before March 1st. Mm. I was going to wear it on March 1st, and it says Rachel Dolezal almost, because she almost made it into Black History Month, but bitch, you didn't. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, I cussed. Oh, man. It would have been great. It was a white shirt with black letters.
Oh, my God.
I'm the worst. I'm sorry.
She's the worst. She was. But yeah, so it consisted of stuff like that, and then like forums, because it was online, so you would like talk with other people. So it was weird. I feel like there was one more play we read. I don't know what it was.
I wonder what it was.
Right? Or maybe it was just
poetry. I took it 2 years ago.
Yeah. I don't know. I took it my senior year. It was online. That was
I took it too.
I wish you could sit and like talk and...
Well, like the idea of those classes, like it actually makes me really angry that those are the type of classes that get roped into being online, because they're easy for people to just write, right?
Yep.
So, like, we can sit and we can write out our feelings, and there is no emotional backfire or, like, no... I think there's something to be said about, I love when people feel uncomfortable talking about race.
Yeah.
I love when people feel uncomfortable talking about things they don't know about.
Yeah. Well, it's also, like, I'll speak for myself, like, the need to, like, not offend.
Mm-hmm.
Feel like you're talking over somebody who knows more about the issue than you ever will, if that makes
sense. No, that completely makes sense. I think, but that acknowledgement of that is so important as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I very much have conversations with people, and very often have conversations with people, and they're like, you just love talking about race. And I'm all like, no, I just love that people aren't afraid to talk about it because they think they're going to offend me. Like, that's not why I want to have these conversations. And especially because I went to a university where I was surrounded by white people. Like, I'm not afraid of that. And I don't want people to be afraid of having those conversations.
Yeah.
Because the longer we don't have them... the longer things stay messy,
it
festers. And then when it does come out, don't come out right. Like, there's something so okay about, like, people saying the wrong thing, but being able to, A, admit they were wrong, and B, be able to understand how you could have correctly said it, or how you could have, how that situation could have came out better.
Right.
So, no, I hate that that class is online. And I remember taking it, I was all like, we could have done this in a classroom, and it would have been great. Yeah. That's why I respected theater history, though.
Yeah.
Because so many, like, I get frustration. Like, people don't like talking about things that, like, are serious like this, or things where, like, history has dictated A, B, and C. But the idea that in... What did I tell y'all? The theater ghost said, don't talk about it, Anthony. I'm talking about a ghost.
I was watching the bathroom light. It was like flicking on and off, and I was like, I don't know why that's happening.
No! They're coming for me. But no, like the idea that we have to have those very difficult conversations.
Yeah.
And the idea that just because, oh God, I remember a specific conversation in theater history. No names will be said. But like, we were talking about how blackface was used as a form of entertainment
in these
touring companies and things along those lines. Mm-hmm. And someone's like, well, it wasn't that big of a deal as long as they, the people were just watching and they weren't doing, right? And I'm like,
the audience?
As long as the audience was not partaking in it, it wasn't bad. They were just interacting.
You were partaking by buying a fucking ticket.
Okay.
What?
But like that that conversation got real heated real quick. But the idea that, but I have such an issue with bystander. Like it's such a big issue all over, and I understand, you know, why it happens. I also understand why it shouldn't happen. But the fact that we have people in 2019 who think that as long as they weren't participating in racism, it didn't count, made me so nervous, right? But it also made me very aware that conversations weren't had in their lives, and I had to educate them real quick about why it was unacceptable.
Sorry, can you just elaborate on that a little bit? Like, just because they didn't participate doesn't... Sorry, can you just elaborate?
Yeah. So basically what they were saying was, as people who are watching, they're watchers. They cannot be held accountable for racist acts.
I see. Gotcha.
Because they did not actually contribute. They did not actually do it, right?
Okay. Yes. Sorry.
No, don't apologize. I also probably didn't explain it that great because I got hated.
You literally gave an example. I don't know why that didn't compute in my mind.
But yeah, so that idea that by watching, they weren't guilty. And it brought in so many more conversations, but I had to kind of go into detail about why that was wrong. But in that time, I realized there was a way of saying it. Because it's very easy for us to pop off when we don't agree about something, right? Like, you're wrong, and this is why, blah, blah, blah. But, like, one, what is that solving? Because it's just not, sorry. Like, being angry is not solving our problems nowadays. Let's figure out how to communicate about them.
Yeah.
And then also, like, clearly there's something that has not connected with them, or they have not been told or taught or whatever it may be. And that's not me saying, like, I have to be the one to teach them, but... Sometimes it's okay when people are truly coming from a state of ignorance, and I use ignorance as they truly don't know, to educate them.
Okay, yeah.
And if you're being responsive, I'm all here for it. If you're not, that's a whole nother... I can't help somebody that doesn't want to hear it, right? Mm-hmm. But if you just truly don't know, we can work with that. I can talk about this all day. All day.
I love it.
Yeah.
I'm messy. But in a good way.
In the best way.
In the best way. I just like difficult conversations. Well, I love that we can do this right now. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because like that, it just bridges a gap. And it's nice to have that disclaimer almost. Like you're not going to offend me. Like, let's just talk.
Yeah.
You know, because I feel like anytime... like, I'm ever near or maybe going to be involved in a conversation like that, I tend to...
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't... First of all, I feel like I don't know enough.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, I feel like I can't... It feel... Not that anybody's making me feel that way, but I feel like my opinion isn't necessarily valid on issues like that. And, yeah, it's the idea of, like, am I going to offend somebody? Like, but, like, it's... You're right. Like, you just got to kind of... rip the Band-Aid.
Yeah.
If it'll probably be difficult at first, or maybe it won't be, but conversation is necessary.
Definitely necessary, especially in our industry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sorry, we're dealing with these problems more. If we claim to be, you know, the ones that... I so often hear people say that theater is what the world is, and so we're the ones that get to communicate these hard problems to the world.
Mm-hmm.
Then tell the hard problems correctly. Like,
yeah.
And also, when we're done with the play, let's continue the discussion.
Yeah.
The work's not done because the play closed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Face, you're like... Boom.
Damn.
Yes. Yeah, we've reached the end of this episode.
Well, thank y'all. Yeah. I'm so happy now. Thank that was you. Like that was a good conversation.
Yes. Thanks for coming on.
Of course.
Oh man.
So we gotta do checkouts.
Yeah. So something good you're looking forward to? Something that happened? Good.
Oh, something good. I should reveal my little secret. So something good. I just accepted a job with Oregon Shakespeare Festival as the company management associate.
Yay.
I will be moving to Oregon for until I say no longer at the end of March.
And
I will no longer be a Chicagoan.
Oh,
I
we're going to miss you.
I will be so sad.
I'm going to plug out my eyeball.
I'll be back. I promise. I'll visit. But I think this is a very important time for me to...
Yeah.
Do this. I think they're, as I've said, EDI all damn day.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they, not all they focus on, but they are such a big proprietor of it.
Yeah.
It's a place I feel like I need to be to further my education, to further my knowledge
mm-hmm.
of this industry. And
it's a great opportunity.
So it's a great opportunity. And
hell yeah.
Here I go to Oregon, West Coast!
Ours are gonna pale in comparison.
No.
Yeah. And he's like, I'm moving to Oregon. I'm like, I'm about to have a glass of wine. I would have made that mine. I'm gonna have a glass of wine today.
Yes.
It's been a long day. We're done.
The only thing I think about, this is gonna be like a longer story, but I went to see a little show that my sister was in.
We were just talking about this.
Yeah, it's just like a newly written work that an English professor wrote. It was about, it was called Votes for Women, and it was about the women's suffrage.
Oh.
And he basically all, it's like three women. It was Ida B. Wells, and then two white women. And, basically took, every word that they said was spoken by them in history, and you mm-hmm. like compile that together. But there was a narrator who was the one man that went with them to. It was like the women from Chicago went to DC for the march,
mm-hmm.
and he was the one journalist from Chicago that went with them.
Yeah,
he was the one that had the most lines. It was cringeworthy, and it ended with him saying something about how women should take a page out of these women's book so that we can make the world better. And that's how the play ended. And I went, I was so mad. But the good thing is I'm just very appreciative of my boyfriend Camille because he came in and went,
what?
Yeah, he was very like angry. And he's like, I need to just have a discussion right now about why this is wrong. I'm just grateful for him. That was the good point, is it?
My face is in distraught, y'all.
For a while, I was like, "This is the usual stuff."
Like,
and then it ended on that line. I went, "We need to do this." Not
says the white man.
Yeah.
What in the green book? I can't.
Oh my god!
I can't.
It was just funny, but yeah.
What
so I'm just grateful
book?
For the human I'm with.
Wow. Shout out to the human you're with, because Jesus. Oh, God. Woo, child.
Funny.
Oh, we should say our season thing real quick.
Oh, yeah. A little announcement. So Spencer and I decided that we're going to make seasons out of this podcast. So we're doing 30 episodes a season.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the 28th episode. So we have two more left.
Yeah.
And then we're going to take a break for a bit and then work on like changes and making things.
We have ideas.
Yeah, brainstorming new things that'll make it fun.
Maybe on the 30th episode, too, we'll say when will we be back.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yet.
Yeah, who knows?
I need a break, okay?
I need a break. She need a lot.
Let's go. Cool.
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
Yay.
Oh, boy.
Yay. Okay. Thank you.
Do what makes your heart sore.
Do what makes your heart sore.
Do what makes your heart sore.
Bye.